Oh, hello, boys and girls. Or, well, it's highly suspect that more than one female would listen to this, so my guess is boys and girl. This is Rish Outfield, and this is the Rish Outcast. And before I get started, I've been really good at publishing this show, at putting out this show on a regular basis. I haven't been working on the Dunstief at all over the last month. I haven't done any writing. I think it was nearly 5 weeks before I finally picked up the pen again and started writing. I've got a little errand to run, and then I'm going to go to the library and try to write again. It's an easy habit to get out of, but podcasting, the Rish Outcast, has been an easy habit to get into when I had a little bit of extra time and creative energy, because you need both of those things. And so I have been recording quite a few episodes and editing about one every 10 or 11 days. And so by the time this episode gets aired, I would hope that you have heard the one about me losing my job, about the one about me crashing my car. Although I don't know if I even podcasted about that. I just mentioned getting a new car. And I imagine you've heard about my father getting sick and passing away, because this episode sort of follows that thematically. You have to have had that bedrock for this episode to make sense. And boy, I feel a little bit self-indulgent just talking about me. You know what I mean? I always have the bumper when I talk about art, when I talk about movies, when I talk about writing. That's personal, but it's a step distant from really personal. You know what I mean? You can hear, I don't know, Elton John talk about his process of writing music, and it's good. It's close. It's intimate, but it's not as frighteningly intimate as him talking about his childhood, his awkward teenage years, coming out of the closet, his relationship with his husband. These are glimpses inside, behind the curtain, rather. And I guess this is a behind the curtain. Anytime I talk about me personally rather than just my art. And so I could understand if somebody doesn't want to hear that stuff. So, but hey, you'd be warned. But this episode is going to be about falling short of potential, falling short of expectations.
You know, Mo, my mom once said something that really stuck with me. She said, "Homer, you're a big disappointment." And God bless her soul, she was really onto something.
So I had to do a great deal of growing up in the last couple of weeks. And I don't want to say that not writing was part of that, but in a way it was. I had fewer responsibilities than most of my siblings. My sister, for example, just stopped going to work when my dad got sick, and she just didn't care about the consequences. And I'm not going to say that that's admirable, because it wasn't. But me, you know, I didn't have a job, you know, a 9-to-5 job that I had to go to. And so one of the things that I had sort of pushed myself to do since I lost my job was to go to the library a couple of times a week, at least. I mean, there were 3 or 4 days in a row when I would go every single day. And, you know, I tried to treat it like a job. You know, it's like I go there and my job is to write. Sometimes I would count the words, do like a word count at the end and say, okay, I did 1,200 words. Okay, I did 3,200 words. Okay, I did 800 words. There, you know, I have accomplished something. Now I can go do something else. And that was good. But then my father got sick, very sick. We were told he was not going to make it. Then we were told, oh, he may make it. And then we were told, okay, you know, a couple weeks from now, he's going to be discharged. And I took Big out to eat. It was important to me to eat that day with him. because that had been a really stressful day. The day that I got a call early in the morning and my mom said, you know, it's not good. I'm calling everybody together. And the doctor said he was, you know, he was not going to make it. And so that was emotionally tough. And then he didn't pass. And we had all spent the entire day waiting for him to, you know, to die. And he didn't. In fact, he was cognizant. He was, what do you call it? Lucid. Even though he couldn't speak because he had a breathing tube in, he could nod and try and communicate, you know, with his hands. At one point, I grabbed a Sharpie and a piece of paper, thinking brilliantly that he would be able to write what he was feeling. But he didn't have that kind of dexterity or hand-eye coordination. I didn't realize how far gone the man was at that time. But we had spent all day at the hospital, and then I said, hey, I really need to go out and do something normal, because, you know, I'd had to deal with the knowledge that he was going to die, and then the acceptance of he didn't die, and then hearing the doctor say, 2 weeks from now, you know, you're going to be as good as new. I was like, oh, okay, well, that was an emotional roller coaster, sort of. So I got together with Big that night, and we went to Denny's, which, if you are Gino, is a 24-hour restaurant that every city has, that, you know, where people just go to drink coffee, or they go to eat breakfast food. But it's sort of a social place to eat. You know, you go and you can talk for hours, and usually the staff won't give you the stink eye. They won't push you away. And I needed to talk through that with Big, and, you know, and talk about other things. We talked about the struggles going on in his life, and we talked about the podcast, and we talked about things. I sort of have this, well, I mean, I think everybody does. You have this need to decompress, to get together with somebody and talk. You know, the people that have like a stressful life, or that they have a job that's just rough, they need to go somewhere and just be normal. And that's what that was. So I did that, and he and I had stuff to talk about. And so it was very late when I got home, and I went to sleep, and between 40 and 55 minutes later, I got the call from my mom, who was still at the hospital, that he had taken a bad turn and we needed to get there. And ultimately, yeah, it was not long after that phone call that we allowed him to pass. And after that point, well, I sort of had to step up and be responsible. And, you know, even though I was tired, there were things that needed to be done. And this was when I got to feel useful. There were things that I could do, things that I could take care of. And I did. And that's a good feeling. It's nice to know. We sort of divvied up responsibilities and tried to take it off of my mother's shoulders, and that was good. And even so, you know, there was more than enough stuff to go around for her to have to worry about. Like, for example, there was an argument among the family as to whether my dad would be an organ donor or not. My feeling is, look, absolutely take whatever you need from me. I don't need it. If some kid could use my heart, or, you know, my kidneys, or my eyes, or whatever it is, and it doesn't even have to be a kid, just anybody, I'm not using it. Once I'm gone, none of that stuff is of any use to me. And there was a member of the family that didn't feel that same way. And I don't know how to reconcile that. One of my family members thought that was a really morbid subject, and how dare, and oh, yuck, no. But I believed in it, I still believe in it very strongly. You know, if you need my nuts, if you've got an Audi belly button and you would like to take my innie belly button, again, I don't need any of these things. If it will make somebody else's life better, take it. And so we were sort of arguing about this, and my sister said, I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to talk. And I was like, okay, yeah, no worries. Guys, I got to step out and get a drink. And instead of going to a drink, I went and talked to the nurses, talked to the physicians, and said, you know, how do we do this organ donating thing? And, you know, they talked about my dad's system was really, really messed up. But there were still things like his eyes that could be harvested. Gosh, now I feel like this is also an overshare, like a morbid thing. But I talked to him about it, and I said, okay, do I need to sign anything? And they're like, well, are you next of kin? And I said, no, that would be my mother. And they said, oh, okay, well, the iBank will call her and get her permission. And I said, oh, all right. And I forgot about it. I went back and we started talking about the funeral, and I started writing up the obituary and stuff. But after a little while, my mom got a call, and they asked her all of these questions about his medical history and about the condition of the body. And I guess it really stressed her out and upset her. And it was just, you know, an hour at most after he had died, and she had stepped out into the hall. And I didn't realize that's why she had stepped out into the hall, but that was my doing. That was my fault that they asked her all these invasive questions and that she was not in an emotional state to answer, but she did it anyway. And that's kind of what being a grown up is. It sucks, but you have to do that. And that's how she has always been with her kids, is she would rather take the blow than have one of her kids take it. Anyhow, gosh, guys, this is a roundabout way of talking, isn't it? I didn't mean for it to be. The subject of this episode was being a disappointment, of falling short of your expectations. And I know that my dad passed with very little reason to be proud of me, that I had potential, I could have been more than what I am. I could still be more than what I am. And that is a sad realization to come to. And you know what? Maybe everybody feels this way. You know, maybe there are presidents and prime ministers and porn stars who still feel like, gosh, I could have been more, I could have done more, I could have shot more videos. But it's certainly in the back of my mind, especially realizing that he's gone and that there are conversations we're never going to have, and that there are disappointments, you know, that I'm never going to fix because he's gone. It's his story is over. And one day my story will be over. And what will I leave? What will any of us leave? If you're lucky, I guess you'll have a family that remembers you, that has a lot of interesting stories to tell, that has love, that has lessons that you taught them that they can pass on to their kids, that maybe, you know, people you don't even know will be affected by. And that would be nice. But I don't have any children. You know, I tend to see my nephews as my children. And if the end of my life came, as it will one day, what would I leave behind? What would I have accomplished? What would I have said? What would I have done to leave a mark, to say I was here and this is what I did with my time? And hopefully it will benefit others. Now, you know, we go back to being an organ donor. If this body already starting to have leg pains, you know, I'm fat. Thank God I still have all my hair. This body can be useful. Oh, hair transplant. Wonder if some poor bald teenager could have my head of hair. I'll ask about that. Anyhow, the brunt of this episode was meant to be me not necessarily feeling sorry for myself, but it could sound very much like that. But just coming to grips with knowing that I didn't do a great deal to make my parents, to make my father proud of me. I tend to be selfish. I mean, it's part of being alone, you know, and being on my own for a lot of time. You tend to think about yourself first. You tend to think about yourself only. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, well, I'm the person that I have to think about and worry about and feed, and I come first. You know, I think that that's just natural. But, there's always a but, huh? Well, it's sort of a heavy topic, isn't it? And hopefully I have bookmarked? What do you call, not bookmarked, bookended it with light episodes, story episodes, funny episodes, things like that. You fall short, you realize you fall short. What can you do about it? Now, with my father, there's nothing I can do about it now. Again, yeah, just it's what's done is done. Once someone is dead, there's no more story there. But I was able to equip myself the best I could in those days leading up to the funeral. And people said after the funeral at the funeral, people complimented me on how well I had done, how the funeral was funny and sad and touching and inspiring. And I was like, well, good, thank you. I mean, I'm not good with compliments, so I probably said, and I nodded. But more than one person said that, you know, wow, that was really, really solid. My uncle, who had come in from Vegas, said that it was one of the two best funerals he'd ever been to, and the other was a Polynesian funeral that went on for 3 hours. And I imagine that there was really, really good food for my uncle to love that funeral. And so there, that was high praise indeed. I feel like, okay, I comported myself well. I did right by my father, you know, that week, I hope, but, you know, too little too late, right? Maybe you too have slacked off when you could have worked hard, or turned left where you could have turned right, or stopped right in your tracks when you could have turned left or right, and you know what I'm talking about. Maybe not. Maybe you just rock. Maybe you are the cream of the crop. In which case, I have to wonder why you would listen to my show. Don't sully yourself, Mr. or Ms. Cream. I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be an actor first. And when that didn't work, I wanted to be a writer. And neither of those two career paths are secure, are sure to succeed. I mean, even like going to law school and being a lawyer is not sure to succeed anymore. I've got another uncle, the one that I always talk about that lives here in town, who went to law school and is a very, very smart man and an extremely charismatic person, just really good with people, really good on the stand. He's able to remember statutes and, you know, legal cases and all that stuff. And he struggles financially. He struggles to put food on the table. So, I mean, there's no guarantees financially. But there are more responsible ways to go than saying, oh, I'm going to write for the movies, which was what I decided I was going to do and haven't done. Well, I mean, is that fair? I don't know. Do you remember I did this episode that was about the opposite of of Schadenfreude. It was when my friend, I had a friend that I went to college with, and he got this movie deal, and this movie got made, and he was one of the writers on the movie, and that movie finally came out. There was a whole storm of problems with the studio going bankrupt, and how would its properties get divvied up, and you know what would happen, and all that. And finally, the movie came out, and so much time had passed since that movie was made that the next week, the next Friday, 7 days later, another movie came out, theatrically wide released, that he had written. So within 7 days, he had two wide-release studio pictures with his name on them. And a little bit of me is happy for him because he deserved it. He's a good writer and a good guy. But of course, you know, another part of me is just like, well, what about me? Where's my, what happened with my, when, and gosh, that's, we've all felt that. But it's not attractive. It's not something that you advertise. It's sort of a petty thing that maybe goes through everybody's head. And I think I called it Freudenscheude, which is just adorable, if I do say so. Maybe that'll be my legacy. People will start saying Freudenscheude, and I'll know. Well, nobody will attribute it to me. Anyway, those two movies came out, and it's just like, wow, look, there he is. Miss America. He's made it. Because look, even if neither of those movies did well, and they didn't, to write a movie in the studio system, that's a pretty impressive paycheck right there. And then to have the movie actually produced, there's a check that's probably larger, and the movie comes out. And now what you've got is royalty checks forever? For the next while, at least. Yeah. So that right there is something that he can point to. If he never worked again, he's like, okay, I had these two movies. And who knows? I mean, that wasn't the first screenplay that guy wrote. It wasn't the first screenplay that guy sold. It might not even have been the first movie that he wrote that got made. But it's an accomplishment. It's something you can point to and say, look, I did this. And I don't have that. The one movie that I wrote on that got made, I never got paid. The asshole director insisted on taking sole writing credit, sole producing credit, direct, you know, obviously directing credit, and it never came out. It got finished. I read an article about it. People have seen it. But my suspicion is, I mean, he has this conspiracy theory of why things have gone south and what's wrong and, you know, the enemies that he's made. But my suspicion is the movie is really, really, really bad. Bad to the level of why would anybody want to send good money after bad and spend another dime to release this thing. Does that make sense? If that movie did get released, my name, I guess, would be on there as an actor, unless my scene got cut out. But knowing the director the way I do, there's not even going to be a special thanks to credit. You know, I had asked him about some kind of credit, screenwriting credit, and he flat out told me no. He's like, gosh, I don't even want to get into this. This upsets me, and this has been years, but this guy was such a jagoff that it was like, wow. You know, people in LA talk, in Hollywood rather, they talk about when you pay your dues. Somebody has to pay their dues before that they make it in the film industry. And paying your dues is cliche. It's something that is said a lot, and it may not necessarily mean anything. And it certainly means something different from one person to the next. For Jennifer Lawrence, for example, she paid her dues, and I made quotes in the air, by working on, was it the Bill Ingvall show or, you know, Jeff Foxworthy or one of those Nashville stand-up comics with a catchphrase and an accent. And she played the daughter on that. And people say, oh, she paid her dues by working in that shitstorm. But for, you know, most actors or writers or whatever they are, you get spit upon. You work at the bottom of the ladder in the film industry. You work as a PA. You work as an extra. You work as a stand-in. You work at, you know, bit parts or whatever. You get screwed over. Your scene gets cut out. You get recast. You get fired. You know, get taken advantage of. That is paying your dues. And it works to much the same extent for females out there in the film industry, except that there is also the potential for another way of paying your dues, which, and you know exactly what I'm talking about, so I don't have to spell it out, but there's another way you can pay your dues, and it's ugly, but that's how it is. It is a narcissistic, cannibalistic industry, and the weak are preyed upon. And if you have something that somebody else can sell or can use, then you can maybe make it in the film industry. And part of me in the back of my mind thinks, well, you know, if I had toughed it out, if I had stuck around in LA and paid my dues, continued rather to pay my dues, maybe I would be where my friend is today. Maybe I would be, you know, I have a couple of friends who work on those Marvel animation shows, The Ultimate Spider-Man and Avengers Assemble, and I went to school with those guys, and maybe I'd be writing those. I certainly have a love for those characters. Maybe that's what I would be doing. But I had to leave LA. You know, did I have to? I chose to leave LA. I was afraid. I gave it the old college try, and then I turned around and said, I'm going to, you know, try to do a more conventional job now. And I've been doing that ever since. You know, I'll never know if I should have stayed in California or not. I got this gig with the Marines right before I moved away, and I think about it from time to time. Not a lot, but back when I first moved, I thought about it all the time. This gig with the Marines paid so much money that I wouldn't have to worry about rent. If I just worked with the U.S. Marine Corps, I would have a paycheck that would cover my living expenses. And it came right there at the end when I'd been told, hey, you're done in this town. And I had already decided to move. I had already gotten a job offer, and I chose to leave and sort of abandon that job with the Marine Corps. And that was a mistake, maybe? Maybe not. I still don't see how that job, how working with the military would have helped me with getting my foot in the door as a screenwriter. It's so weird that I'm talking about this when I could be talking about anything else. When the topic was disappointment, being a disappointment, dealing with it. And yeah, let me just talk a couple more minutes and then I'll let you go your way. I feel like I'm just rambling, which is a big part of this show, I recognize. But that's something that you, or in this case me, that I have to deal with. I have to come to grips with. I have to recognize that I have fallen short of my potential, and that maybe I had a chance to be a real cop and I blew it. But when I was in college, I remember hearing one of those platitudes that really spoke to me, and I typed it up and I printed it out and I had it in like my notebook. I had it, gosh, where else did I have it? I would put it places where I could see it, like in the morning. And the statement was, it's never too late to be what you might have been. And, you know, in the back of my mind, the word platitude is a negative word. It's a pejorative. You know, like deus ex machina or social justice warrior or, you know, knee-jerk liberal or douche. You know, these words, platitude is something trite. Platitude is something that people say that you hear over and over again. It might even be equated with cliche. But if that's true, if that quote is true, it's never too late to be what you might have been. Then it's profound. It's profound as hell. So those are your options. Profound as hell or trite and cliche. And for a number of years, I found it to be the former. I found it to be really profound and inspiring and encouraging. And maybe, you know, in a time like this of reflection, it's good to go to that and think about it again and say, is it not too late? Now that we've gotten here past me whining and gotten to what I feel is the summing up and the end of this episode, another one of those episodes that's, you know, just too much of me, a TMI episode. Oh, maybe I should put that warning on every single one of these episodes that's, you know, an overshare, a Rish Outcast overshare episode. But now that we've got all of that part out of the way, I mean, maybe you're tempted to say, well, but look, Rish, you've got 60 episodes of your solo podcast out there. You got, you know, 100 and something episodes of the Doonstief out there. You've got a novel that you published. You've got whatever Journey of a Sidekick is, maybe not a novel, but a big old hefty, fat, bloated novella. Newfound Fame is out there. I don't know if anybody bought it or anybody liked it, but you liked it while you were writing it. These are things that people can look at, and you created them. You put them out there. And maybe if they're not good, then that's not a positive that I put them out there. But, you know, I think they're pretty good. I know there are people that I have made laugh. I don't know if there's any people that I have made cry. I think my buddy Jeff cried a couple of times at the things that I wrote, which was such a compliment for me. I got one guy laid with something that I wrote. And, you know, there is a steady, not even a trickle, whatever smaller than a trickle, like a drip of income coming in because of that, because of what I create, because of my art. And I continue to add to it. I continue to do new projects. I was just thinking yesterday, I was like, okay, what's the next of my novellas that I'm going to put out there for people to buy and or listen to? And that's neat to always have that in the back of my mind or in my back pocket to say, okay, there's more to put out, more things I can work on. Because listen, it's easy to sit and feel sorry for myself. I do it well. But to find a project and to commit to that project and say, okay, this is what I'm going to work on, is at least an activity. It's a way of moving, not moving forward, but it's a way of doing something that I consider to be constructive. And if there's a dollar sign, even if it's a very small dollar sign, heck, it might be a cent sign attached to it, then that's something you can point to and say, well, look, I did this and I got this. Maybe I need to sit down and audition for a couple more audiobooks. There was one that I thought that I was going to get for sure. I was pretty excited about it, actually. The writer, it was a female writer, wrote me and was like, oh, I really liked what you did here. It's between you and one other guy. If you would mind doing a second audition. And that had never happened before where somebody asked me to do a second audition. But it was between me and one other guy. And she said, if you do the second audition, this has the main female character in it. And, you know, I just want to hear how you do her voice. And I thought, okay, I've got this. I've definitely got this. Because I listen to enough audiobooks to know what I like and what I don't like. And what I don't like is a person that does this for a girl's voice. Or does this for a girl's voice, you know, where they don't even change their pitch or the, you know, the, I don't know, modulation or whatever you call that so that it designates that it's a different person talking. And it's like, you know, okay, that's something that I'm good at. I'm going to come up with a female voice that's recognizably female, but it's not a caricature and it's not grating. And so I sent that to her, and I was surprised that she went with the other guy. But she did. And there was a pretty good paycheck attached to that particular book. And I haven't auditioned for anything since then. Now, mostly because there was still one more audition I was waiting to hear back on. And it's one of those, oh my goodness, 100,000 word novels that I know would just be all consuming, that would take up a big chunk of my free time if I get it. And so I've been waiting, but maybe I shouldn't have been waiting. Maybe I should just jump right out there and audition for a couple more and see if I can't get another thing with the dollar sign attached to it going. It's just baby steps, kids. You know, you work on this little project and then you work on that little project. And yes, it's not film acting. Yes, it's not writing for the movies. But did you hear my production of Newfound Fame? I got to sort of do a movie within a story. And that was me being able to pretend that I am what I wanted to be. And that doesn't always happen, does it? Anyway, all is not gray. All is not miserable. I have fallen short. I have been a disappointment. I know that I'm not what my parents would have wanted me to be. I'm not what I would want me to be. But there are good moments. There are good points. There are days, gentlemen and lady, when I do okay. And sometimes you cling to that. That's what you need to get you going, to keep you going, is I'm doing okay. I hope that you are doing okay. You've been in the car with me for another hour, and that makes us friends. I hope that even though maybe you have fallen short of your goals and aspirations, you haven't thrown those goals and aspirations away. You haven't given up on your dreams. No, maybe you won't accomplish all of them. Who does? But what about one? Well, find one that you can do. A bucket list, if you will. And mark it off. And then maybe you'll have time before the end to accomplish another one. I don't know. I hope so. Hope, as a certain horror writer, my favorite writer, said, is a good thing. Maybe the best of things. And no good thing ever dies. This has been Rish Outfield, the Rish Outcast. Good night.
The podcast you have just listened to was produced under a Creative Commons, non-commercial, no derivatives license. Share it while you still have the chance. And remember, there's a Patreon page out there if you'd like to throw a dollar or two my way. I must be dreaming.